When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello and welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Ben Hobson.
And me, Jane Maguire.
Today we're talking with founder of the running charity, Alex Eagle, about using running to support the homeless. Jane, hello.
Hello.
Are you all right?
I want to speed through this chat because I am so inspired by Alex and I want everyone to not listen to me rambling about my running and just listen to him, because isn't it the most inspiring chat we've had all year?
There's no interest in hearing us talk about our running when there's such a fantastic story about what Alex has been doing and the charity work that the him and the running charity do. So we should just probably get into that. This is going to be the last podcast before Christmas. We'll be back in the new year to dazzle you with our chat and our guests. So get ready to subscribe real hard at the end of this. But I think without further ado, Jane, I just feel like it. You know, we should just get our guest of the week on.
Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone, could be an athlete, could be a physio, or a complete unknown.
Alex, welcome to the Runner's World podcast.
Thank you for having me.
For anyone listening who's unfamiliar with the running charity, can you tell us a bit about who you are and the work that you do?
Yeah, so we're a small charity. We deliver running and personal development programs to young people impacted by homelessness. Homelessness is a really kind of broad net. Essentially, our young people just have a lot of complex needs. So on average, our young people join us with 6 complex needs and 7 different mental health conditions. So we work with really young people that are going through really difficult and challenging situations. And at the kind of pinnacle of that iceberg sits homelessness, because it's often a result of a range of complexities that happen below. Our coaches work with these young people to really kind of put a community and an infrastructure around their lives, and running really helps with that. And what we see and tend to see is young people improve their mental health, their circumstances they're in, and begin to form some form of positive, happy life, which is lovely to see.
And how does are the running coaches therapists as well as the therapy, or is there other stuff going on in those sessions?
Yeah, so essentially, like 3/4 of our team are former graduates of our program. So they've been through our work, and they've got that direct lived experience. They're all trauma informed as well. We have access routes to kind of young people can gain counselling while they're in our services. They have a range of different options to engage. What we've always tried to do is really kind of like when we first started the charity. My background was like sports coaching, so I was a football coach beforehand, and then I ended up seeing a kind of a job at a homeless day centre, where I kind of thought, well, if they're looking for a football coach, I'll give that a go. And in the end, I was there for 10 years, and the sports stuff started really good, and then it began to phase out because of the first recession. And a lot of my sports work and the running and the football and the boxing all became very reactive. So it was a way of stopping someone hitting someone else. So it was like, this guy's about to kick off. Can you deal with it? So I said, oh, let's go for a run, or let's have a kick about. And that was really all meaning and all well and good. But we were ticking on thinking, Jesus, like, you know, my shoulders can only take so much of being whack to there. How can we build something that's a bit more long term for these young people? I met a guy called James, who was a real passionate runner, He'd lost a friend to a heroin overdose, and they used to run together. And he was like, listen, I really want to get a program where I get a group of young people running. And I was like, well, I want something that works with young people over a long period of time. Can we kind of merge the best of youth work? Can we merge the best of the running elements and put on a program? Really, you know, we didn't have any grand ambitions to become a charity. That certainly wasn't my aim. I was just working with 12 young people that love sport, but were just either in emergency accommodation, they're in night shelters or rough sleeping. And it was just like, how do we give these guys a really good experience? It was just on the back of the Olympics in 2012, and it kind of went over to Christmas, and it was just like, let's give them 6 months of equal pleasure and hell, yeah. And see how they come out at the end of it. And within that 6 months of working with them, they all become housed, all became employed, all did fantastically well. And then I continued to do it in my evenings, and it got to a phase where it was just like, actually, we're getting lots of requests. Claude, a member of our first program, ran the London Marathon, and the marathon kind of got involved and said, listen, we'll give you some funding to see if you can spread it to different places. So me and my partner, we moved into my mother-in-law's, quit job. We had about a week's cash flow, and me and Claude went full time. And my partner, who'd just had our first child, started doing the funding bids, because like me and James were dyslexic, and our funding bids, and when we were trying to get trainers and stuff, was a horror show. So she was reading them and just said, I think you guys need a little bit of help. So she chipped in there. So it was a real kind of family affair to start off with. It was me, James, Claude, and Lucy, and then it kind of developed into something that none of us really expected. And you know, we're based in London, Manchester and Leeds now, and we've just secured some we've just taken a gamble on Brighton as well, because we feel there's a real opportunity there to make some impact. So yeah, the young people come to us, they get referred to us by kind of a range of different partners, and then we pick them up and we work with them one-to-one just to start off, so they can build a bit of trust with us. They've normally been let down by a lot of kind of services authority, because there's a big lack of trust. It's taken, the longest it's taken to get someone out running is 18 months of them going, nah, I ain't running.
Yeah.
And now they've run an ultra marathon.
Wow.
So, you know, we're committed. And my passion was always to create something that was, that really worked with the hard to reach young people that I was working with, and the complex cases, because, you know, a lot of sports work and you know, those kind of charities move to kind of employment stuff, and that's really valid and a really needed thing for youth unemployment, because it's, that's a pandemic in itself. But ultimately, we were working with young people that weren't at that threshold yet, and would go into these services and basically leave dejected and not suitable for it. So we really wanted to build something that kind of worked on young people's community and mental health. And we've done all right with it so far.
Yeah.
We're quite pleased. So
you mentioned that how initially you were doing this reactive stuff and you were using the running to kind of like diffuse situations and all that sort of stuff. How does the running fit in now with how the charity operates? Is it like a sort of, as you said, it takes 18 months sometimes to get people out there to do it, but is it just that sort of the side of running that we all perhaps know, that is, it's a release, it's that sort of moment of clarity perhaps for others when you're running and you're allowed to just be with yourself and your thoughts and you can help process them? Is that kind of where it fits in?
Yeah, 100%. I think anyone that runs knows that during probably the difficult times in their life, they lean on it as a way of coping. And our young people, you know, they don't have any running role models or anything like that before. They've never ran before, apart from maybe to a bus or maybe away from someone.
Mm.
And, you know, our view was, well, there's an initial resistance to running because it's not seen as a sport for young people. So, you know, Claude, for example, is fantastic at breaking it down, like feeding a kid vegetables, essentially. He chops the running up really small and he does horrible burpees with them until they go, can we go for a run?
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, we manage it in
different
ways.
What's worse than running? Burpees. You know, all right, here we go.
We imagine it different ways. You know, some young people are more akin to it. So about 30% of our client group are young refugees and asylum seekers. And often from, you know, different parts of Africa, like the Horn of Africa, that running is a very much staple part of culture and a national sport. So we get young people that are really keen on it and some people that are dead against it, you know, and continue to be dead against it even though they turn up to 3 sessions a week and run and say, oh, I hate this, and it's like, well, you're here every day, so you must be getting something out of it. So there's that initial resistance often, but what I find for me, the running helps young people commit to process again. I think the system that our young people often have to navigate and operate in is either grossly unfair or grossly unfunded. So, you know, are there enough quality jobs that enable you to afford housing? Is there enough suitable housing out there? You can attend as many kind of housing appointments, job interviews, and it doesn't always go somewhere. And young people, I think, you know, we've all been young, and we all, when you're young, you want things quickly, especially when you've got the threat of, you know, having to sleep outside or sleep in dormitories in really unsuitable situations. So, you know, there's this impatience of youth, which is often a good thing, but I think it can lead to a disenfranchisement with process. And what I think running really does teach you, if you run 5 5Ks, you're either going to be faster or find it easier. And there's that tangible reward that gets built in really quickly. And we don't do it for them. They have to put their foot in front of the other. They have to do the work. And they set the goals that they want. You know, we don't set a destination of how fit they need to be or what an outcome looks like. So we don't say, you need to feel happier by the end of this process, or you need to have a job by the end of this process. Our thing is, where do you want your life to go and how can we help facilitate that? And for us, that starts with that run. And when you take a young person to a physical point where they thought it was impossible to start off with, so first session, we'll try and often run people into the ground a little bit and say, well, okay, you managed 3K there. Like, you know, where do you think you'll never get to? And it can be like 5K, 10K, half marathon. And it's the coach's job then in the immediate to bring someone up to that. And once you've someone has committed to that process and got to that space where they thought physically they couldn't do it, it opens up other doors of, wow, I've committed to that and that process worked. It was bloody hard, there were setbacks, there were really good things about it, but ultimately this is where I'm at now and I achieved that all myself. Where else can that lead in my life? And then that's where we kind of open a bit of a Pandora's box and say, great, well, should we tackle this issue? Should we tackle that issue? What kind of fundamental issues are going on in your life that we can support you with and guide you through it in the same way we did that with your running journey? And I think that is a real tangible thing for young people to commit to. And I think it's often why we see such positive results in so many of our young people.
Well, that sounds amazing. And you just mentioned that Claude, one of your first, I don't know how you refer to him, yeah, first members.
Yeah. He was a member of the charity, and then
went on to an ultra. Yeah, went on to do an ultra.
Oh yeah, well, Claude did the London Marathon. You know, Claude's a superstar, really. We've had the London Marathon did an award for, I think it was like the 26 most inspiring people to ever run the London, wow, Marathon. The Spirit of London Awards, and 2 of them were our young people.
There you go.
You know, so they were in pretty good company. We had Paula Radcliffe there and people like that. We were at this do and it was like, wow, this is pretty cool. But they are, you know, Claude is a special individual who's gone through tough times. He was a young refugee from the Rwandan genocide. Mm. He grew up in the UK, had immigration problems, and then, you know, had issues with university and family breakdown and things like that, but came through the other side and has now, since we founded, been giving back to other young people. And we've tried to build that into the development of the charity. Like I said, 3/4 of our London team have been through our programme. You know, if we were adequately funded, we could employ people in Leeds and Manchester who have been through our programme as well to continue that scope. You know, I think one of the things I really love about this job and this the work we do is it enables us to kind of flip what vulnerability is and going through difficulty is on its head. You know, we never focus we made a decision early on that, you know, when we talk about our young people, we wouldn't talk about them, you know, the homeless person shivering in the corner. You know, that's not who we are as an organisation. We celebrate their successes. And I think these young people, when they go out and they compete, they're competing on they're competing with any person, and they're winning, and they're doing well, and they're showing that actually they have the ability of anyone. They've just been unfortunately put in a position, normally 99.9% of the time, through no fault of their own. And we're able to show, I think, the wider society that actually they draw strength from their experiences. And, you know, although in an ideal world they wouldn't have gone through those experiences, they are resilient, excellent people. We've had young people that have competed in the Olympics, you know. So when we talk about where you know, the often perception that, you know, homeless people must have failed somewhere, actually many of our young people have achieved more than we can dream of.
I think that's and especially now in the current climate, the rhetoric around immigration is so negative and so, like, well, it's just awful. So, you know, it's important that, as you say, the achievements of the immigrants who are coming and people that you're working with, people who come to this country, you know, it's success stories, it's achievements, it's big wins, and that's because that's not what the general language around these people is.
No, young people in general, let alone, you know, people from asylum seeking and refugee backgrounds, that, you know, they're often, you know, demonised and criminalised. And you look at all the measures, whether that be financial contributions to society, to cultural, and, you know, every area, it's a net gain. And I think, you know, I never get the rhetoric around it, because my experience of over, Jesus, too many years being a youth worker and a coach and working with young people, has rarely ever been negative. It's always been such a joy, and seeing young people flourish when they're given that little bit of stability and that chance to actually build. Because how many of us have, if you look back at key points in your life, gone, oh, I was so pleased I could move back in with my mum there, mum and dad there, or I was lucky I could borrow X amount from them and then pay them back a little. You know, how many people have those support networks around them when things get a little bit difficult in their lives? And if you don't have that support network, it's easy to fall through the cracks. And, you know, and that's when it starts. Like, there was a report, I think, made by Centrepoint that, like, 1 in 7 young people experience rough sleeping at one point in their life, whether that be a night or longer. That's like 3 kids in every kid's classroom. You know, this is an issue that isn't about something that's abstract over there. This is the kids in your class. This is the people you pass in your community. You know, you can see the long-lasting damage from it. And once you experience that, and once you're in that kind of trap of, you know, either rough sleeping or experiencing homelessness, the risk goes up exponentially. I think the average age of death for a homeless person is about 46. You know, and, you know, it's so fixable. You know, look at, you know, my frustration, one of the most hopeful things and one of the most disappointing things I saw from the pandemic was, when the pandemic started, we housed homeless people. We solved it in like 3 nights. It ended, right? Because there was political will to do so, right? Now levels are moving back up to exponential rates. It's, you know, it's such a fixable problem. And although, you know, we're not a housing provider, or we don't deal with that side of things, we work on people's mental health and the kind of underlying issues that cause the complexities, this is an issue that can be solved if there's political will to do so. And that's what I think is so depressing about it, is it needs to be fixed. And people need to be housed, and people need to be given that safety to build foundations. Because often we've done it in this country where, you know, fix your problems, then we'll give you the house. When really, if you look at the lots of policies, and we're implementing it now in the UK more, is something called Housing First, where the housing is given first, and then the wraparound support happens afterwards. And it is shown to be far more successful. It costs 26k on average to keep someone rough sleeping. How much does it cost to house them? It's financially more expensive to keep someone homeless than to house them. So that is hugely baffling.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
And we were talking before the podcast about your recent campaign about a runner called Seifu, who's an Ethiopian runner, isn't he, in the UK? And talk about amazing runners. He's won, was it the Big Half or the London Landmarks?
He won the London Landmarks by 5 minutes. This lads, an incredible young people, and like so many of our young refugees, the pandemic has been especially hard for them because ultimately they survive on very little money as it is, but on the flip side it's meant the Home Office is under a huge amount of pressure, so where cases should be heard in a certain amount of time, it perpetually goes on, and they have a huge backlog that we need to, you know, they need to get through, but everything's kind of stalled. So we've got these young people in a constant state of limbo, of not knowing what their future is. And Seifu, for example, he joined our program. We always knew he was a good runner because he disappeared when we went running. So we'd start off in Regent's Park and then he would start running off. And then our session was, right, we need to find Seifu. Right.
He's gone.
He would go, and we didn't know how far he would travel in that time. He'd always come back. Mm-hmm. But it was like, okay. And then we took him to, I think it was the Oxford Half Marathon. And Claude took him along, and I was busy that day. And Claude gave me a call, and Seifu started with all the rest of the young people at the very back, you know. And Claude rang, he's winning, he's winning. What do you mean he's winning? What's he winning? The race. And I was like, oh, what? So Seifu had managed to battle his way through all the fun runners, all the fun racers, past the competent runners, past the good runners, to the elite runners, and he was winning that race. In the end, I think he finished second. But that was the moment where we knew that, you know, we were dealing with a very special runner in that regards. And, you know, we hooked him into, it was Heathside Running Club, because, you know, ultimately, although we're all passionate runners, we needed to work on the other issues Seifu was facing, and we allowed that side of things to be taken care of there. And he's now club captain with them. But he is a young man from Eritrea. The Home Office had acknowledged that he is a victim of torture and human trafficking, and he had his first asylum appeal rejected. So Seifu is now at risk of being deported. His lawyer, who's fantastic, has appealed this decision, and we were looking at, because we always feel a little bit powerless in these circumstances, because we're not immigration experts or legal advisors. We can't give advice to any of our young people who are going through the asylum process. All we can do is really be there for them emotionally, and speaking with the lawyer, they felt that actually when they consider someone's rights, it's not just their individual rights, it's also the community that they've built up. So we launched a petition relatively naively, thinking, oh, you know, Heath Sayre will sign it, and you know, he's really friends with a lot of people in Parkrun, at Highbury Fields Parkrun, and we'll gain some support there, and then we'll be able to present that alongside to the judge around, you know, showing that the importance that Seifu plays, not just to him and our community of young people, because we get refugees that come in and asylum seekers that come into our programs, and to have a role model like that is significant for them. But I think we're over 7,700 signatures so far. And he appeared in The Guardian, and there's been this huge groundswell of support, which is really fantastic, and just shows that actually this young man has built a family in the running community. And if Seifu's appeal was effectively continue to be rejected, it's not his human rights that would only be affected, although it profoundly would be for him. He's built friends and family here that rely on him. He's club captain of Heathside. You know, this is a someone that's embedded in our community really strongly, and we just wanted to show that side of things to the wider public. And you know, Seifu's a bit of a unique case in terms of just his ability, but this goes for all our young people. You know, we don't judge runners in the charity by how fast they are. But, you know, our young people, especially the ones seeking asylum, they really bond and adapt well into our country and our society, and give back incredibly. And, you know, this was an opportunity to help. And we did the form online and then kind of let it set sail, and you know, and it's gone really well, and we hope, you know, by speaking on programs like that, people can continue to support and lend their voices to Seifu. You know, we're hoping to speak to members of parliament, because for us, I think, you know, Seifu came over as a minor. He was one of the first kind of waves of young people that came over from Calais, from the jungle, one of the children there. And it took so long for his case to be heard. By the time they made the decision, they felt Ethiopia was safe for him to return. It's in a state of emergency. Government recommendations is don't travel there because of serious threat to life. You know, and that applies to Seifu. Seifu, you know, speaking to his lawyer, wouldn't be able to run there. He wouldn't be able to live a normal life. And we know Seifu, when he either gets an injury or his depression hits him hard where he can't run or he struggles, he nosedives. And this is not a future for this young man. You know, we're trying to just do what we can. My aim is, I would love to see the government overturn their original decision. I think it would be, you know, Seifu has to go to court again to go through that trauma and relive some of the experiences he's gone through. It's a traumatic experience. I would like to see, in my opinion, that overturned, and Seifu to be given the right to remain in this country and build his future. He wants to run for Team GB. You know, he is a fantastic runner. But the issue is, you know, he's competing against elite people where he's living on hardly any money, no decent food. He's not competing them on a level playing field. And the longer this drags on, and it should have been made years ago, the longer this drags on, this potential of this young man slowly gets eroded. And, you know, we hope this decision could be made really quickly to give Seifu the biggest chance to fulfill his dreams.
Yeah, 100%. I know it's just a very small example of 1,000 different cases like this that are going on in the country, but it has been amazing to see the running community get behind it. Because, you know, he's obviously a very talented athlete, and that, as you say, doesn't mean he should be given perhaps more favour than others, but it goes to show that, you know, it affects absolutely everyone, especially those within the running community, and it's just, you know.
100%. Yeah, and it was a question that we asked ourselves as a charity: would we do this for other young people? And what we want, you know, one of our values is we go the extra mile for young people. So, you know, Seifu is a unique case, and this opened up an opportunity because of his ability to be able to push this angle. But, you know, last week I was on the phone to someone else's solicitor that lost one of our young people's all their documentation, you know. So we do what we can with every single young person, with every circumstance that they face, to fight their corner and to be their champion. And, you know, our coaches do a tremendous job of doing that. You know, we've you know, grown to Leeds and Manchester, but the guys there, they've all started as volunteers. They've all, you know, really dug in. Like George in Manchester is a fantastic guy. He started our Manchester programs. I remember him calling me when we first started the charity. He saw Claude on the London Marathon coverage, and he was like, "Oh, how do I get it? How do we start this in Manchester?" And I'm like, "Well, I'm in my mother-in-law's shed, mate. Like, I don't think I'm your man to hang your hat on, to be honest. But you know, we can tell you where we went wrong and navigate some of those pitfalls." And George started the sessions in Manchester. He worked in pharmaceuticals for 20 years, but he was a keen ultra runner, a fantastic runner in general. And then, you know, the sessions were going all right, but he arranged a call with me where I thought, oh, he's going to knock this on the head, because he's seen some sense. He's not as stupid as me. And he'd quit his job and remortgaged his ass and was like, I'll do it for a year. And, it, you know, it's a better midlife crisis than buying a sports car.
That's true.
And, you know, George has now been with us since for the last, like, 4 or 5 wow. years. You know, the young people that he's helped have really been profoundly had their lives transformed by him. And the same goes for Liz in Leeds. And, you know, we're very fortunate as an organisation to have such wonderful staff and have such wonderful people support us. And, you know, I joined this. I was the youth worker. James was the runner. So my introduction to the running community was pretty much non-existent before, you know, the running charity. You know, I was the youth worker that, you know, coached on the football field and shouted at people. And James was the committed runner. And, you know, I've just been, ever since, you know, I've been part of the running community now, I've been just blown away by the support that people offer us. You know, we've had just people go above and beyond all the way through. And I think the biggest thing we hear from runners is they interrupt me when I begin to try and explain how it works and go, no, I get it. Because, yeah, I get it. Just tell me how I can help. And that's just, you know, I get blown away. We had someone run the length of New Zealand. We had someone run non-stop from Asia to London for us. He joined us last month as an employee of the organisation, a guy called Russ. And he's going to be starting to launch like residentials with our young people, take them out on kind of mountaineering trips and trail runs and things like that. And we're really excited with that. And from that, we're also looking at how we can take people on those adventures with him, because Russ is a unique personality. Same kind of age as our young people. He's only 24. He holds a world record for pulling a car the length of a marathon. He's a special kid. You know, we're in this place where we just have such passionate staff, and you know, I kind of got left holding the baby, so to speak, running the organisation, and you know, my life is made incredibly easier by having those people around us and the running community that have just been flabbergastingly great to us.
You said you must have been stupid, but I think that's the last word I would use. I think it sounds, the way you talk about your charity sounds absolutely incredible. And it's one of the best things about doing this podcast, hearing stories like this. But what do you hope next? Like, what's the big goal for the charity?
We're not driven by anything in terms of, I think a lot of kind of expansion is linked with kind of ego, to be honest. We don't want to be the biggest thing in the world. What we want to do is continue the quality and deepen the work we do. You know, I think so far, you know, we've always expanded when we have a passionate runner that has either the stupidness or pigheadedness of me, that really wants to make something work in their community. And we look to see how we can build a volunteer package around them, train them, support them. And then, you know, we don't never want it to be a charity that like gets money and just wastes it and go, oh, we're going to launch here and oh, it didn't work. That doesn't matter. So we always build things up slow. We always make sure that there's a real tangible interest in the work and we can prove and provide the impact there. So my aim is to continue to grow relatively organically in terms of supporting the running community to make a difference within their communities, but just make sure we don't dilute the work. As I said at the start, we work with young people with like 6 complex needs and 7 mental health issues. We don't want to, you know, it's easy. When we first started, we used to talk about the numbers we want to work with, and each coach roughly works intensely with 30 young people, case study and casework people for 30 young people. We engage a lot more. But when we first came to the tried to look for funding, we said they're going to work intensely with 30 people, we're like, go away, no, go and work with 300. And it's like, well, you can't work quality with 300, especially with the complexity of the client group we work with. So we've always wanted to remain firm in the quality of the work and the levels of support. You know, we're wrapping up kind of the impact for this year, and it looks like, you know, we track a lot of people on kind of NHS mental health and wellbeing measures, and it looks like 70% of the young people that join us in what could be considered by the NHS as a state of depression, like 70% move out of that, you know, into normal categories or high categories. They still carry the same trauma and experiences, but they've learned how to manage it, and they've now got the tools to lean on stuff like running and the support kind of we give them in terms of key working and stuff. We want to just make sure that we're continuing to do the great work. You know, we're launching, our young people wanted to launch a kind of virtual medal. And they designed, and we've managed to get that designed and things like that. So we're going to launch a virtual medal in the new year that people can come onto the website and buy. And they're all designed by young people, and is being managed by young people. And the profits from the sales go into supporting more of the programs. We also have Russ, who's joined us, who's going to be doing stuff around taking fundraisers and, you know, running clubs and all that lot up to kind of do Three Peaks challenges and all sorts of craziness. And you'll get to spend 2-3 days with Russ, which I guarantee will be an experience in itself. So we're doing those kind of things, and we're just looking at really how can we just be sensible? How can we ensure that any step we do make doesn't compromise the young people we're currently working with? And I think that's always the risk of people that want to kind of go, oh, we'll be everywhere. It can easily go wrong from there, and we just want to make sure that we provide real good quality and get people to fall in love with running, and we're pretty good at that, and use it in those moments where, you know, in their life when they move on from us, and, you know, they build families and careers and things like that, that during those difficult times when life gets a bit difficult again, which it always does, that they have a tool that they can lean on. And, you know, there's none many better than running.
Well, how can anyone who's listened to this, who I'm sure will be inspired, how can anyone get in touch, donate, get involved? Where's the best places to find out about the Running Charity?
We've got the website, which is www.therunningcharity.org. So very Ron Seal, as it says on the tin. So you can go there, and that's got all the information about the work, how to get in touch, around kind of volunteering, how to donate. Like I said, we're going to launch this kind of virtual medal thing in the new year, which if people want to kind of engage with that, that would be fantastic. You know, we're just kind of poke around and give us a shout. Follow us on Instagram, follow us on Twitter.
Well, we'll put a link to the petition as well.
That'd be really, really cool. I think as many people can sign that and share that as possible. One of the unexpected consequences of people really getting involved is they were trying to find, say, for a new lawyer. He's got a fantastic lawyer who's doing really good, but getting that signature and signing that petition and then sharing it to the wider running network, your running clubs, will make a real great deal with it, because we can really show that the running community is behind this young man and other young asylum seekers facing the same difficulties as him. So that would, if I could ask anyone to do anything, it would be that.
Alex, thank you so much for joining us. Great to talk to you. Great to hear more about the Running Charity, and yeah, all the power to you. It's an amazing thing that you're doing.
Oh, we're very lucky.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast, and a huge thank you to our guest, Alex Eagle, and to you, of course, for listening. It's not too late to subscribe to Runner's World magazine. If you do it now, you might well start the new year with a fresh copy on your doorstep. I mean, don't hold me to that. I don't know about the timings and postage and all that sort of stuff, but it's a nice idea. So Google Runners World UK subscription. Find it on the internet. Do it. Make us all very happy.
And talking of the new year, we're taking a little Christmas break, but we'll be back in the new year, we promise, for more interviews, reviews.
Such a massive sigh. Oh, God. We'll be back at some point.
We'll be back, probably.
Hey, guys, don't forget to subscribe. We'll be back soon.
Have a good Christmas.
Merry Christmas, everyone, and a Happy New Year.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.